Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Ox Talk for the week of Tuesday the 26th of August. My name is Ross and I am compiling this week's edition. This week's news items were collected from the local Oxford papers, with some news being edited by Margaret Simpson, with some selected and read by Hazel Hobbs and Leslie Court. Sunrise for the upcoming week will be around 6 a.m. with sunset being around 8 p.m. The cropping and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Here there will be some instructions on how to listen to Ox Talk online, using your Alexa device, and at the end of this edition, you will hear how to access OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to OxTalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to OxTalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
A 12-year-old music prodigy from Oxford performed his self-composed piano concerto in a world-renowned concert hall in Vienna this summer. Kerry Tan, a Year 8 boarding pupil at Summerfield School in Oxford, took to world-class stages in Arad, Romania and Vienna to play the piano in his first composed piano concerto. The premiere at the Arad Philharmonic Hall on August the 5th was the first stop of his concert, titled The Explorers, which uses symphony music to portray the challenges and joys of exploring the sea, desert and space by modern explorers. The second concert on August the 9th took place at the Golden Hall Musikverein in Vienna, one of the world's most prestigious classical music halls. Mr. Tan, an extraordinary musical talent, began playing various instruments when he was 5 years old, passing the ABRSM piano grade 8 exam when he was 8 years old with distinction.
People are being urged to take some of their rubbish home to help improve recycling rates. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils say up to 70% of waste discarded in public litter bins could be recycled if taken home. But once mixed with food and general waste, these items become unrecyclable and end up in landfill. This summer's Take It Home campaign encourages residents to bring empty bottles and cans home for recycling rather than disposing of them in public bins. Councillor Sam James Laurie, Cabinet Member for Environment at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "To be recycled, items need to be kept away from potentially messy, non-recyclable rubbish. Most public litter bins don't allow that, and those that do often get misused. So, if it's recyclable, please take it home and put it in your green wheelie bin. By doing so, you'll help us cut down on unnecessary waste and help to protect the environment too." The campaign advises residents to take home and recycle items such as empty cans and bottles, plastic food containers, newspapers and magazines. A quick rinse is recommended before placing food containers, cans and bottles in the green recycling bin. a spokesperson for the council said, to make sure your empty bottles, cans and plastics are recycled, please take them home, give them a rinse and put them in your recycling bin. Items suitable for public litter bins include sandwich packaging, empty crisp packets, chocolate wrappers, fast food packaging, disposable coffee cups, film lids from food packaging and bagged dog waste. Councillor Hayley Gascoigne, Cabinet Member for Environmental Services, Climate Action and Nature Recovery at Vale of Whitehorse District Council said, people are trying to do the right thing, but if a can or bottle goes into a public bin, it won't be recycled. This campaign is about small changes that add up to a big difference. It will also mean there's more room in bins for items that can't be recycled, helping to avoid litter overflowing and ending up on the ground. The campaign is part of the Council's new Rethinking Waste strategy, which aims to reduce waste, improve recycling rates, and encourage more sustainable behaviours. To support the Take It Home campaign, the Council already provides some street recycling bins in towns and larger villages. However, they are often contaminated by food waste, liquids and dog mess bags, which means items cannot be recycled.
Pork and an Israeli flag have been left on the door of an Oxford mosque in a widely condemned hate crime. The Muslim community at Central Oxford Mosque in Manzil Way has been left heartbroken by the attack. Meanwhile, a senior police officer has vowed to do everything in his power to track down the culprit. The incident saw a lone man wearing a grey tracksuit and balaclava climb over the Masjid fence of the religious place of worship at around 12:35 a.m. on Tuesday, August the 19th. He is said to have stuck pork on the Masjid door handles and draped an Israeli flag on the middle door. In-house security working that night phoned 999 and the police attended, but the suspect had fled. It's understood a forensics team has been down to take evidence and volunteers and the imam have purified and cleaned the door handle. The trustees added, this is an act of cowardice and is a hate crime. Last year a person also threw a petrol can marked IDF over our gate. They urge neighbours to check their CCTV and to help the police in their investigation. They added, this is heartbreaking for our community and emotions will be high. We request calm in our community. Hate crimes target division and we stand united with our community. Oxford East MP Annalise Dodds and City Council leader Susan Brown said in a joint statement, we are appalled to hear that Oxford Central Mosque was subject to a cowardly hate crime. We are grateful to the police for investigating and to the mosque committee for acting swiftly following this despicable act. City Council Deputy Leader Ed Turner also described the attack as awful and wicked. Saj Malik, leader of the Real Independent Group at Oxford City Council, slammed the attack as one of cruelty and ignorance. He called for the community to remain calm and supportive of one another and added, we have a strong relationship amongst our communities, across all faiths and backgrounds, celebrating our differences and embracing religious diversity in Oxford. We must all come together to support one another in times of fear. Alex Powell, ward councillor, said he is very saddened and that he stands united in opposing hatred. Oxford is an open and inclusive city where all people should feel welcome, safe and respected, he added. Racism, Islamophobia and any other form of hatred have no place in our community. Chief Superintendent Ben Clark said, this was a provocative act to upset and offend mosque users. Such behaviour has no place in our community and we will do everything in our power to bring anyone involved to justice. An active investigation is ongoing with a number of lines of inquiry that are being progressed by detectives. We understand this incident is distressing and are working closely with community leaders while continuing our inquiries. The mosque remains open and officers are providing support to those affected. Anyone with information is urged to call 101 or report online, quoting reference 43250 423 138.
From Memory Lane, our spotlight on Oxfordshire brass bands prompted one reader to recall a special year for one group of musicians. Oxford Silver Band celebrated its centenary in 1987 with a series of concerts and appearances in national and regional competitions. When it was formed, the ensemble was known as Headington Silver Band and it changed its title to Oxford in 1952. By its centenary year, the band had beginners, training and senior sections supported by patrons who raised money for instruments and transport and paid for the practice hall in Temple Road, Cowley. The 30 musicians in the senior band, led by 1984 Young Conductor of the Year Ian Johnson, had reached the first division of brass band competitions after winning through in the London and Southern Counties Section 2 Championship. Frank Wolfe, who had just retired after 25 years as band secretary, said at the time, "The band has gone from strength to strength and is now among the top bands in the country, and it is tough competition. We feel that with a young band and an excellent conductor, they are going to do well. We look forward to showing Oxford that it has a band to be very proud of." The centenary celebrations included concerts held at the Ashmolean Museum and Oxford Playhouse, recording an LP, a long-playing record, and new uniforms.
A beloved pet tortoise has been reunited with her family after 2 weeks on the run. Mindy the tortoise has lived with her bister owner for a quarter of a century. However, in late July, she went missing in the King's End area of the town, sparking social media appeals from Percy Tustain and his sister. Described as having some paint and a crack-like mark on her shell, Mindy is reportedly an excellent climber. The family asked the public to keep an eye out in the gardens and under pots and other garden features. After 2 weeks, she was found with a little cut but no other damage and was reunited with her owner. A group of lifelong golfers have now played more than 80,000 rounds between them at Oxford Golf Course. John White, Ron Creese, Chris Digweed and Dave Jones have been members at the Cowley Club for a combined total of 237 years. During their estimated 80,580 rounds, they have collectively covered around 288,553 miles, equivalent to circumnavigating the Earth twice and then travelling to the moon. The quartet, who first met in 1972, have achieved 19 holes in one between them, won several high-profile competitions, and played with golf legend Peter Dawson and the Duke of Marlborough. Mr. White was the first to join the club in 1957 at the age of 13, when membership cost just one guinea a year. He grew up in Lye Valley and secured his first job as a trainee instrument maker at what is now Churchill Hospital, positioned yards from the 17th green. The former club president said, "I grew up right next to the 13th fairway. So I'd leave home in the morning when working my first job and play holes 13 to 17, park my clubs at work and play 18 onwards coming home. It's remarkable to think I've been a member here for almost 70 years. At 90, Mr. Creese is the oldest member of the group. He joined in 1966 and was club captain in 1982 before becoming club president between 2010 and 2012. He said, "I had to have a new knee fitted in 2003, so like most people my age, my mobility is somewhat restricted. Golf gets me out of the house, it helps me socialise with others, and we all have a great laugh playing." Mr. Jones, another former club captain and president, has played at more than 1,200 courses in the UK. The 77-year-old praised the playing conditions at Oxford Golf Club as among the best. He said, without doubt, the quality of the course is the biggest change over the years. In the summer of 1976, you wouldn't find a single blade of grass on the course. But even this summer, with the unusually dry weather, the course is in fantastic condition. I still believe it's one of the best Parkland courses. It's a real challenge with a good variety of interesting and demanding holes. Mr. Digweed said the best advice he has received in 57 years of playing came from his first coach at the club. He said, I would be okay as long as I hit my bad shots straight. That was great advice and has stuck with me.
An Oxford charity has been accredited for its baked treats. Life-Changing Bakes has gained a Great Taste 2-star for its double cheese biscuits and a Great Taste 1-star for its almond kisses. Life-Changing Bakes is a social enterprise run by Yellow Submarine, a charity that supports adults with learning disabilities and autism. Through Yellow Submarine's enterprises, including 2 cafes, trainees gain work experience and skills. The enterprise produces a range of fresh and packaged bakes with 100% of profits going directly to the charity. Out of the 14,340 products that entered the rigorous blind judging process, only 1,508 received a 2-star rating awarded for food that is above and beyond delicious. Another 3,899 products earned 1-star for food and drink that delivers fantastic flavour. Judges described the double cheese biscuits as beautifully buttery and the almond kisses as indulgent. Enterprise manager Sophie Bradley said, "We're thrilled to have won 2 Great Tastes award. We've longed for this moment and are so proud to be adding the prestigious black and gold badge of honour to our life-changing bakes. Until recently, our baker, Julie, produced all our products from just one oven in our Whitney Cafe kitchen, so it's an extraordinary achievement. Having just opened a new bakery, we can now take on more orders and support more trainees, so this comes at a perfect time." Yellow Submarine opened a new location in Whitney in March. The new location, which has not been fully disclosed at this stage, will allow the charity to expand its impact, it said, providing more opportunities for young people with learning disabilities and autism. The charity, which supports young people aged 11 or older, currently has 2 social enterprise cafes, one in Oxford and one in Whitney, where those with learning disabilities and autism are able to gain work experience in a supportive environment. These cafes serve as classrooms teaching every aspect of cafe work, from till service to dishwashing. More than 70,000 customers visiting the cafes each year, Yellow Submarine said it has earned a reputation not only for quality of its food and coffee, but also for changing perceptions of disability. The new Whitney location will provide a dedicated Life-Changing Bakes production space, which is designed to better support trainees who may find a busy, loud cafe environment challenging. The expansion, which will allow Yellow Submarine to increase its capacity by around half, comes as the charity seeks to meet growing demand from suppliers, having delivered 1,800 Christmas cakes last year to various businesses, hamper distribution companies, and customers. The new location will provide support and respite for 6 additional trainees, offering an extra 4,400 hours of assistance, which Yellow Submarine said will allow it to continue its mission of supporting people with learning disabilities and autism to live life to the full.
A 7-week programme to restore Blenheim Palace's 18th century clock tower has begun. The restoration will replace the current sun-bleached paint and faded gilded numerals on the east and southern faces of the clock. 10 days of work to construct scaffolding to access all four faces of the clock tower has already begun. Once the scaffolding is complete, a four-week restoration of the clock faces and gilding of the golden ball at the top of the tower will begin. This will be followed by a week to remove the scaffolding. All existing paint and gilding on each clock face will be removed before each face is then repaired and repainted with Capri blue paint to match the original specification. Each numeral, border and hand will be re-gilded with double gold leaf. Blenheim Palace will also work on the golden ball on top of the tower.
Plans to build an electric vehicle charging station near an abandoned park and ride site have been lodged again after a previous proposal was refused. EV charging company Fastned wanted to build the station on the junction of the A40 and B4449 near Ensham. The station would also include a small building with a WC and vending machines. The site is close to the empty multi-million pound 19-acre park and ride site, which was built without an access road. The company previously submitted a similar proposal for an EV charging station earlier this year, but it was refused by West Oxford District Council's officers in March. Officers said they refused the scheme because the development would give rise to harm to the character and appearance of the village, as well as pedestrians and cyclists who live and travel nearby. Their report also states that there was insufficient information about how the station would impact local biodiversity and ecology. While the refused plans include 8 charging spaces with rapid charging facilities, the new plans would include 12 spaces. The new plans also propose that access to the station will be via Hambro Road only, rather than creating an extra access point onto the B4449, which was part of the original plans. The applicant's planning statement said, "The revised proposals directly address the previous concerns over siting, layout and design by reducing the canopy height, introducing extensive native tree planting within the site and retaining and protecting existing boundary vegetation to maintain the green buffer that contributes to the setting of Ensham. The updated access arrangements remove the additional egress that previously conflicted with the strategic infrastructure improvements, ensuring safe and unobstructed pedestrian and cycle movements. High-quality, sustainably sourced materials and sensitive design details balance visual integration with the rural setting, ensuring that the proposal no longer results in harm to the character and appearance of the area or the quality of life for neighbouring residents." It later adds, "The plan would help meet the critical and growing need for ultra-rapid electrical vehicle charging infrastructure in the district. The previous scheme garnered a number of objections from members of the public, as well as some supporting comments."
An historic pub on the edge of Oxford, which was put on the market 3 years ago but not sold, is set to be turned into a house. Owners of the White Hart at Whiteham, which closed in September 2022, said it was taking losses of £300,000 and insisted the property will never operate as a public house again. They have applied to change the use of the historic 17th century building to a 4-bedroom dwelling house, as the full extent of its financial losses and failure to sell on the open market have been revealed. When it closed, the pub was operated by Mark Baz Butcher of Ace Pubs Limited, who had been at the helm of the business since 2015 in an attempt to negate the previous poor reputation and several changes of ownership, according to the planning application for the property. Up to 2019, the Village Pub took 4 years of losses amounting to well over £300,000 before it was closed during the coronavirus pandemic. On its full reopening in 2022, the applicant said the business was hit by staff shortages, hugely escalating energy costs, food and drink cost inflation, as well as the continued high costs of events and marketing required to build the business as a destination venue given its remote village location. The pub revealed electricity costs jumped from about £2,000 a month to £7,000 a month, and gas costs for cooking increased by about 50%. They added that of a village population around 150 people, no more than 12 villagers regularly used the pub. Although it was continuously marketed by Fleurettes for 3 years up to April this year, and the details mail shot to nearly 8,000 parties, there were only 27 viewings of the property, and only two offers were made, both of which were withdrawn. The guide price was originally set at £975,000, but even when lowered to £600,000, there were no buyers. The applicant said, "It is clear that after 3 years of marketing the premises as a public house on both a freehold and lease basis, it's no longer viable as a business concern. The property will never operate as a public house again, unfortunately, and an alternative and viable use of the premises will be required." Plans to turn the historic public house, which has served customers for about 300 years, into a four-bed family home, have now been submitted to the Vale of Whitehorse District Council's planning portal. The proposal seeks no external or internal changes to the current building, only permission for the change of use and the reprovisioning of existing rooms to go from a pub to a dwelling house. The application is open for public consultation on the planning portal until September the 12th under reference P25V1632FUL.
Figures show alumni from Oxford University win the most literary prizes of any other university, with graduate winners including authors Sir Philip Pullman and Naomi Alderman. The Selected British Literary Prizes dataset published this year compiled information on the winners and shortlisted authors of 9 major British literary prizes over the last 32 years. It revealed Oxford University produced 12% of the 682 writers recognised in an award from 1990 to 2022, almost double that of the runner-up, the University of Cambridge. Oxford produced a total of 116 prize shortlisters and winners, with 55 of those named the winner of the prize. Included in the long list of accomplished graduates of the university are Naomi Alderman, who won the Women's Prize for Fiction for her novel The Power, and Oxford resident Philip Pullman, who won 2 awards for the final instalment of his Dark Materials series, The Amber Spyglass. Various Oxford authors were named multiple times among the winners, and shortlisters with the 116 alumni prize recognitions being shared among 77 authors. Writer Julian Barnes won the Man Booker Prize for his novel The Sense of an Ending in 2011, having been shortlisted twice previously in 1999 and 2005, while Rachel Kusk similarly appeared on the list 3 times between 1993 and 2015. Established mystery and thriller writer Mick Herron was listed 5 times between 2013 and 2020, while Matthew Neal's The English Passengers and Hilary Sperling's Matisse, The Master, both won 3 prizes each in 2000 and 2005 respectively. Poet and novelist Sir Andrew Motion, who served as Poet Laureate from 1999 to 2009, has won 3 of the literary prizes for poetry and 1 for his biography of Philip Larkin, a fellow author and Oxford alumnus. The study, authored by Catherine Binhammer, Kanika Batra, Theo Gray and Maurice Jayasuriya, is part of the ongoing Orlando Project research on feminist scholarship published by the Cambridge University Press. Prizes include the James Tate Black Memorial Prize, Costa Book Award, the Booker Prize, Women's Prize for Fiction, the Gold Dagger Award, the British Science Fiction Association Award, the T.S. Eliot Prize for Poetry, Ted Hughes Award for New York in Poetry, and the Bailey Gifford Prize for Non-Fiction.
Cotswold Wildlife Park is celebrating the second birthday of 2 of its rhinos. Henry and Susie became the first rhinos in the park's history to be born within just a week of each other in August 2023. Henry, a male white rhino, was born on August 12, 2023, to Ruby, marking the 10th calf born at the park in the past decade. Just 1 week later, on August 19, 2023, Nancy gave birth to Susie, bringing the total number of calves born at the park near Burford to 11 in as many years. Both calves arrived during the park's annual Rhino Month, which raises awareness and funds for rhino conservation in Africa. Henry had a famous first visitor, as Reggie Hayworth, managing director of Cotswold Wildlife Park, explains. "Dear friends of the wildlife park, Ruby Wax and her husband Ed Bye were the very first to see our then new baby rhino. Ruby named the rhino mum Ruby when she arrived all the way back from South Africa back in 2009, just ahead of the wildlife park's Ruby anniversary in March 2010. It really has been a double celebration, welcoming a new baby rhino and seeing Ruby and Ed again, such supportive visitors of the wildlife park." Susie's birth came nearly 10 years after Nancy delivered Astrid, the park's very first rhino breeding success, in July 2013. The Southern White Rhino Breeding Program began in 2009 with the arrival of 3-year-old Monty, followed by Nancy and Ruby. After 40 years of hoping for a birth, Astrid's arrival in 2013 marked a major milestone for the park. This August bank holiday weekend, from August 23rd to 25th, the park was due to host its annual Rhino Month fundraising event. The rhinos can be seen in the park's large paddock overlooking the manor house or inside the rhino house. Cotswold Wildlife Park first welcomed southern white rhinos in 1972, just 2 years after opening. These rhinos were called Bella and Bull and were 3 years old when they joined the collection. Paddy, born in 1965, was next to arrive, and the trio lived together for around 30 years at the park. Award-winning photographer Rory Carnegie captured some lovely images of Henry and Susie just hours after they were born. Recent photographs taken by keepers show the young rhinos as they marked their second birthdays.
The Environment Agency is objecting to major plans to redevelop a leisure park next door to Oxford United's football stadium. Ozone Leisure Park in Grenoble Road, Littlemore, is expected to be redeveloped by Faroca and the Pioneer Group. They have formally submitted their plans, which include new science labs, a cinema, restaurants, cafes and green space, to Oxford City Council's planning portal. The Priory Pub, a Grade 2 listed pub which has been empty since 2013, will also be restored for public use. However, the Environment Agency is objecting over a failure to provide adequate protection for nearby priority habitats. Sarah Green, Environment Agency Planning Advisor, said, "We object to the proposed development due to its failure to provide adequate protection for nearby priority habitats, including insufficient buffer zone around Littlemore and Northfield Brooks and the associated riparian habitat. The existing and proposed block plans show only a very minor reduction in encroachment from the tarmac track and the Littlemore Brook, limited to a very small area in the northwest of the development site. Given the maintained encroachment into local wildlife sites and priority habitat, the application needs to demonstrate meaningful enhancement to the watercourse to mitigate for the insufficient protection of the habitat. We therefore recommend that planning permission is refused on this basis and will maintain our objection until the applicant has supplied modified planning documents that satisfactorily address these risks." Public objector David Cahill of Kilnclose, Sanford-on-Thames said, "Sorry, but I totally object to this planning application. These much needed and much used facilities should be kept and supported. The old Park Club gym should never have been allowed to close after COVID and should now be reopened and supported by the council. To think a council would allow this application to go so far beggars belief. The area is surrounded by housing estates which need all these facilities and more. Please do not remove the ozone building complex and associated amenities, as they are much loved and cherished. The plans will also include the existing 520 car parking spaces shared between the Leisure Park and Kassam, which the developers say will reduce to 347 spaces when the Cowley branch line comes forward. When the proposal was first announced in February, the developers initially planned to demolish the existing view cinema and bowling alley and replace them entirely with lab space. These plans faced significant backlash from locals who were angry about the potential loss of community facilities. The planning statement submitted by the developer said, "Ozone Leisure Park has long been a valued destination for people of all ages, offering entertainment, dining and leisure activities."
BBC science presenter Professor Brian Cox has said he is excited after receiving a scholarship from the Francis Crick Institute. As part of the scholarship, the 57-year-old will present a new podcast called A Question of Science, produced by BBC Studios and recorded at the London Biomedical Research Centre. Cox said, "I'm excited to bring a different perspective to the Crick and its science, and I'm personally fascinated by the convergence of physics, with the questions being asked by biologists at one of the best research institutions in the world." The podcast, A Question of Science, has already shown that the real experts have much to say about issues that affect all of us, and that scientists can even be entertaining. His role will also see him promoting, explaining and exploring multidisciplinary research and championing the role of science in the world. Paul Nurse, Chief Executive and Director of the Institute, said, "We're very much looking forward to working with Brian, who will be a great addition to the Crick community." The new podcast will launch on September the 17th, with episodes looking at subjects such as climate change, cures for cancer and AI, and will run for 12 episodes. The Royal Air Force has conducted a training mission to practice precision night drops across Salisbury Plain training area under the cover of darkness. Photos show an A400M Atlas from 24 Squadron poised on the 25 threshold at RAF Brize Norton in Oxfordshire last week. The mission tested the crew's proficiency in operating under night vision conditions, essential for tactical air mobility in complex environments. An expert said, once airborne, the sortie took the Atlas to the Salisbury Plain training area, where it worked closely with 47 Air Dispatch Squadron to conduct a series of airdrops. These precision deliveries under night vision not only sharpened operational skills, but also reinforced the seamless integration between air crew and ground teams. The sortie demonstrated how RAF air mobility forces maintain their edge in delivering critical equipment and supplies. A collection of iconic props and costumes from Downton Abbey is to be auctioned for charity. The third and final Downton Abbey film is due to hit cinemas next month, and an exhibition and sale of the period props is live for the next month. Oxfordshire was a regular filming location for the drama, which concluded in December 2015 with a Christmas special, with Bampton playing the role of Downton Village. Other nearby locations included Cogs Manor Farm in Witney, Kingston Bagpew's House near Abingdon, and Basildon Park in Berkshire. Props, costumes and set pieces in the auction are on display at Bonham's in New Bond Street, London, until bidding closes on September the 16th. Among the 267 lots is a 1925 Sunbeam saloon chassis car, estimated at between £25,000 and £35,000. Lady Mary's wedding dress and accessories are expected to go for up to £5,000. Money raised will go to Together for Short Lives.
A key road in Oxford will close temporarily next month to allow for a layout change and signs for the upcoming traffic filter trial. Marston Ferry Road and Charwell Drive will close from Monday, September the 22nd to Saturday, September the 27th between 7:30 p.m. and 6 a.m. The works include installing a new road layout including traffic signs, traffic islands and carriageway resurfacing. Oxfordshire County Council confirmed the works are in preparation for the traffic filter scheme, with Marston Ferry Road being one of the six filter locations. Under the traffic filter trial, motorists would face a £70 fine for driving through several roads in the city in certain times. The trial was meant to have already started, but has been delayed until after Botley Road reopens. The County Council are considering introducing a temporary £5 congestion charge on the same roads as the traffic filters after facing pressure from the bus companies to deal with traffic. A decision will be made on the congestion charge in mid-September. The traffic signs will be installed on Marston Ferry Road, have not been confirmed yet, and will depend on whether the council decide to introduce the congestion charge. The other roads that will have traffic filters installed and possibly a congestion charging point are Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, Thames Street, St Clemens and Hollow Way. These roads will not be closed before the decision on the congestion charge is made. One Hollow Way and Marston Ferry Road, the filters will apply between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Saturday, and for other roads it will apply from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. An Oxfordshire County Council spokesperson said, the infrastructure is for the traffic filters trial scheme, which was approved by the Council's Cabinet in 2022. The trial was due to start last autumn, but has been delayed until Network Rail completes the Oxford Station works and Botley Road is reopened. The temporary congestion charge proposes to use the same infrastructure, cameras and location points as traffic filters, but nothing has been approved at this stage. The temporary congestion charging scheme proposals will be reviewed by the Place Overview and Scrutiny Committee on August the 27th and then presented to a County Council Cabinet meeting on September the 10th for a decision on whether to go ahead. There are no plans to close the other road, as most of the infrastructure has been installed and outstanding work requires minimum traffic management. If the County Council's Cabinet approves the congestion charge, it could be in place as soon as this autumn. Luke Marion, Managing Director of the Oxford Bus Company, previously said in May that congestion is at emergency levels in the city and called for a Plan B to tackle the issue after the traffic filters trial was delayed by the Botley Road closure.
Plans to transform a Headington NHS site into a major mental health and medical research campus have been submitted to Oxford City Council. The proposal, submitted by Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust, would see the Warnford Hospital site redeveloped into Warnford Park, a hub for patient care, scientific innovation and education. Grant MacDonald, Chief Executive at Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Our plans present a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to transfer mental health services in Oxfordshire and beyond. It would allow us to provide high-quality care for patients in modern facilities and a therapeutic environment with on-site research translated directly into clinical practice. Our plans are also respectful of the incredible heritage of the site. Through considered restoration of the historic hospital buildings, we will give them a new lease of life whilst continuing the site's long history of providing mental health care." The project is a collaboration between the Trust, the University of Oxford and a benefactor. It includes a new mental health hospital to replace the Grade 2 listed Warnford Hospital, believed to be the oldest inpatient unit still in use across the NHS. The new facility would offer modern inpatient care in a therapeutic setting designed to connect with nature. The application, developed by Eric Parry Architects, also proposes a major research centre for the University of Oxford, as well as space for biotech, pharmaceutical and start-up companies. The research campus will aim to tackle some of the most important issues in brain and mental health by discovering new forms of treatment and therapies. A new University of Oxford postgraduate college focused on medical sciences and bioengineering is also part of the plans. The planning application is a hybrid submission combining outline and full planning requests under a single master plan. No development is proposed for the nearby Warnford Meadow. If approved, further applications will be made for the listed hospital buildings once the new hospital is operational. These would cover the refurbishment and conversion of the existing hospital into a graduate college. Professor Irene Tracy, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Oxford, said, "This is an exciting moment for our partnership with Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust and our ambitious plans to transform the Warnford Park site into a major medical research campus with a focus on brain and mental health alongside a brand new postgraduate college. The application follows two rounds of public consultation and stakeholder engagement. The public can comment on the plans until September the 19th as part of the Council's formal consultation process."
A former private school has been sold for £4.5 million just a month after it announced it would close. In November, governors at Carter School blamed the VAT tax hikes as the reason for its struggles and subsequent closing down. The final day at the school in Banbury for more than 100 of its pupils was on Friday, July the 4th. Tudor Hall School, which owned the private school along with Tudor Hall Boarding School, also in Banbury, has confirmed a sale of the building and land happened last month. In an accounts report for the schools, the governors said they carried out a review of Cardiff's future after the VAT announcement. However, it led to the realisation that Cardiff was no longer financially viable for the senior school, Tudor Hall School, to subsidise the losses of the junior school. This resulted in the decision to close Carter's school and sell the site, the governor said. The sale completed in July 2025, with the site sold for £4.5 million. Bank loans totalling £2.03 million, secured against the asset, were redeemed at the point of sale. Carter's school's operations were subsidised by revenue from the senior school, Tudor Hall, for a number of years, the governors revealed, and the impact of reduced pupil numbers and increased costs meant it was no longer viable to do so. The governors are satisfied that this action has stabilised the finances of the charity and ensured a strong basis for the future, they said. The school currently holds a healthy cash balance, which can be supplemented, if needed, by an overdraft facility. Conservative cash flow modelling with sensitivity analysis indicates that the cash reserves of the school are adequate to meet the school's obligations as they fall due. Accordingly, the governors believe the school's financial resources are sufficient to ensure it will continue as a going concern for the foreseeable future, being at least 12 months from the date of approval of the financial statements. Since January the 1st, the Labour government has applied a 20% VAT to private schools in the UK, but it has also seen a string of private schools collapse, including here in Oxfordshire, with Oxford Sixth Form College and Our Lady's Abingdon both closing and job losses announced at St Edward's School. Demand for Tudor Hall School remains strong following the VAT announcement, though, the governors added. Cardus also blamed the removal of charitable business rates relief and an increase in employers' national insurance as a reason for the closure. Alison Darling, Chair of Governors, said ahead of the school closing, "This final term has been one of mixed emotions for everyone connected to Cardus. We are all so sad that such a wonderful school, so loved by generations of pupils, parents, staff and governors through its 73-year history, is to close tomorrow because of government policy."
A new cafe and event space will open at Oxford Technology Park later this year. The venue, called Nexus, is part of a partnership between Life Science REIT, which owns the park, and hospitality specialists Gather and Gather. It's hoped it will become the social and professional centre of the Kidlington Park. Ian Harris, Director of Asset Management at Ironstone Asset Management, the investment advisor to Life Science REIT, said, "The signing of this agreement for Nexus Cafe and Event Space is a significant step forward for Oxford Technology Park. As the park continues to grow, it is vital that it offers high-quality amenities that not only serve the occupiers, but also help create a stronger sense of community. We're delighted to be partnering with Gather and Gather and look forward to seeing Nexus become a central hub for collaboration, innovation and connection across the park. Located in the Innovation Quarter, Nexus will feature 239 seats in both indoor and outdoor areas. The space is designed to bring together businesses, employees and the wider community, offering freshly prepared food and drinks made from seasonal ingredients. Gather and Gather's team of chefs, baristas and nutritionists aim to serve food that not only delights but also supports well-being." An Oxford angler has discovered almost 300 bullets while magnet fishing in the River Charwell. Steve Bierman, who goes by the name of Hooligan Outdoors UK, made the astonishing find earlier this month near Tackley Village, which is next to the River Charwell. He posted about it on Saturday, August the 9th, and said, "Look at this haul. I've never found a bullet before. Now I have 297 in total. Not bad for a random hour out." Mr. Bierman has been magnet fishing for several years now and has found a pistol, a 19th century cast iron model train set, and several padlocks in that time.
A £49,000 grant from the National Lottery Heritage Fund will help to unlock and preserve the history of Slade Camp in Oxford. Wooden huts at the former military barracks at the foot of Shotover Hill at Headington provided much-needed housing for dozens of families after the Second World War. Now the grant to the Oxford Preservation Trust and the Shotover Preservation Society will allow more to be discovered about this fascinating site. Jim Woods, chairman of Shotover Preservation Society, tells me, "We will be able to capture more of the stories from this community, forged by unusual circumstances, who had showed a remarkable resilience in a difficult time for the country. It's a great pleasure working with former residents and volunteers in bringing this special part of Shotover back to life. When the war ended and the troops left, there was a desperate need for housing, and the huts, if not ideal, provided somewhere for families to live. After they moved out, the site became overgrown and derelict, but in recent years, volunteers have worked to uncover the remains of its buildings and other hidden features. Part of the grant will be used to create a guided trail for visitors. A month-long exhibition will open at the Westgate Library in Oxford on September the 1st, and there will be guided tours of the site on September the 14th. Over the years, Memory Lane readers have shared their memories of Slade Camp. Carol Burke of Hazeldene Close, Ensham, spent 4 years living in one of the huts with her parents, Joan and Evan Hopkins. She wrote, "We had 2 bedrooms, bathroom and toilet, kitchen and living room. It was cosy and warm in winter. I quickly got used to living there and found it a happy place to be, surrounded by open lands and woods with easy access to Shotover." Another reader, Jeff Orman of Brashfield Road, Bicester, recalled, "It was an amazing place to live and play. I look back at my time at the most enjoyable part of my childhood." However, Robin Breshin was not so impressed. "Conditions were terrible. Our hut was an 80-foot-long single room with no water, 1 light and a fire stove, which didn't heat the room very well."
There are pages and pages devoted to the GCSE results this week, but I'm just going to focus on 2 short items, which I hope highlight some of the issues. First of all, the gender gap is at the narrowest GCSE point. The gap in GCSE results between boys and girls is now at its narrowest point this century. While girls are still outperforming their male classmates in terms of both top grades and reaching at least a 4C, their results dropped slightly this year. The narrowing of the gender gap could be due to a combination of reasons, including societal pressures on girls and the continuing impact of the pandemic, education experts suggested. Overall, a quarter of girls' GCSE entries were awarded at least a grade 7 or A, compared to almost a fifth of boys' entries, 19.4%, a 5.1 percentage point gap. And then here's one about an Oxford head teacher has described the impact of students joining in the midst of the COVID lockdown. Rob Pavey, head teacher of Cheyne School in Headington, was speaking as Year 11 students opened their GCSE results. The year group started secondary school in 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic. Mr. Pavey described the impact this had. He said, "This cohort are our COVID babies. They were more affected than any other year group. The learning gaps were closed long ago, but the emotional impact and some of the mental health difficulties came from that. We've seen in this cohort a much higher percentage of those who are struggling mentally. So actually, these results are therefore really special because they're in line with last year overall. Lots of students have done really well. The grades 7, 8 and 9 are very much up. Just as importantly, these kids who struggled have stayed in touch with education and are going on to college or apprenticeships. He added, overall, these were a very special set of results. We're very proud of the kids. They missed the end of year 6 and the transition to secondary, and when they started, they were in those bubbles, which was a nightmare. Then they were locked down until about Easter, so they only came back in, and then there was the whole testing regime and all that nonsense. Then normal school only really came in for them in year 8, so they had a year and a half of disruption. This year, almost 30% of the school's grades were 7 or higher, and almost a fifth were grade 8 or 9. The Ministry of Defence has admitted there have been dozens more data breaches relating to Afghan relocation cases than are publicly known. A Freedom of Information request by the BBC revealed there had been 49 data breaches in the past 4 years, including 4 already known to the public. 7 breaches were serious enough to be reported to the UK's data watchdog, the Information Commissioner's Office, ICO, 3 of which had not been made public, the broadcaster reported. Those 3 included 1 in 2021 and 2 in 2022, the same year a major leak prompted the government to obtain a super injunction barring journalists from reporting it. The Ministry of Defence, MOD, did not provide any details of the nature of each breach.
An exhibition featuring artwork from one of the few remaining artists with first-hand memories of World War II will go on display at a military museum. The Soldiers of Oxfordshire Museum in Woodstock will open the new exhibition, Remembrances of War, from September the 13th to November the 18th. The artwork is by Paul Joyce, born during the Second World War in 1940. Mr. Joyce's work mixes childhood memories of playing among the rubble of Crystal Palace with cultural memories of a nearly destroyed world. The paintings in the collection reflect this interplay between first-hand and received experience, with the paintings of the smouldering detritus of South London sitting alongside imagined scenes of the destruction at Hiroshima and elsewhere across Europe. He said, "My first thoughts on beginning the series were to paint exactly what I remembered, but then I began to throw the net wider and included London images which I had not personally experienced, as for the length of the war I was based in Hampshire." A recurring theme in Mr. Joyce's work is the absurd power of war to fuse the apocalyptic with the mundane. He paints how war clashes with ordinary life in scenes like a German fighter plane lying among haystacks in the countryside and the Tower of London under barrage balloons. Mr. Joyce said, "I think I must be one of the last artists born during World War II still painting the conflict as a subject. As a painter, I find myself returning to a project I started some years ago, representing some of my recollections of the war." His paintings are influenced by artists like Paul Nash and Eric Raviolis, characterized by juxtaposition of pastoral and military elements. The paintings are devoid of people, but are filled with planes, objects, and the built environment, evocative of the people's spirit during the war. Remembrances of War place Mr. Joyce's paintings alongside artifacts from the Soldiers of Oxfordshire Museum collection, depicting how ordinary people rationalise and survive extraordinary events. The exhibition is open to all ages, with children's activities and interactive experiences, including a reconstructed 1940s bedroom and arts and crafts area. Entry to the exhibition includes access to other galleries, including the Anderson Shelter, First World War Trench, and the Lifelines exhibition, which explores the liberation of Bergen-Belsen through community art projects. Visitors can also enter a raffle to win one of the exhibition paintings. Tickets cost £5 and winners will be announced on December the 2nd. The museum is open Tuesday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m.
A new world record for the furthest distance travelled by a battery electric train on a single charge has been set by Great Western Railway train running through Oxford. The train travelled 200 miles on a single charge during a return journey from Reading Train Care Depot, which took in London, Paddington and Oxford. This achievement surpassed the previous record of 139 miles set by Stadler Deutschland in Berlin in 2021. The Class 230 train, number 230001, is the train used in GWR's trial of fast charge technology on the Greenford branch line over the past year. Dr. Simon Green, engineering director at GWR, said, "We're delighted to set a new world record. It's a real tribute to colleagues at GWR and Network Rail who have worked so hard on developing fast charge technology. Today's record attempt has been a bit of fun, but it also underlines a serious point. Investment in battery technology is essential as we look to replace our aging diesel fleet." GWR recently published a white paper outlining the findings of its battery train trial, which demonstrated battery electric trains could be a practical and cost-effective replacement for diesel units. The operator is currently developing plans to renew its regional fleet, much of which is expected to go out of serviceable use in the next 7 to 10 years. Dr. Green said, "Overhead lines will remain the first choice to power electric trains, but where that isn't possible or desirable, battery technology like this offers a reliable and efficient alternative to bridge the gap. As part of our future rolling stock plans, we'll need battery trains to routinely cover over 60 miles between charges, and today's achievement provides clear evidence that this is a viable and exciting solution for the future of our railway." The record-breaking journey was verified by the Rail Performance Society, which monitors and records the performance of railways and railway traction in the UK. Nigel Smedley, Vice Chair of the Society, said, "We can confirm that, subject to final checks, the Great Western Railway Class 230 train travelled 200 miles on a return journey from Reading Train Care Depot without charging its batteries from any external energy source." Network Rail Operations Director Simon Gilliband was among those at Reading Train Care Depot to welcome the record-breaking battery train. He said, "We'd like to congratulate GWR on setting this world record. Rail is already the greenest form of public transport, and today's record-breaking journey shows what an important role new technologies will play in our commitment to a low-emission railway, with a goal of reaching net zero by 2050.
And that is all the news for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, please feel free to contact us by phoning 07496 062 280. That is 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message, or you can send us an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and past editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to these editions directly or download them online. If you need any help or have any further queries, please feel free to contact us. That is all for now. We hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you for listening.